You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello everyone, a very warm welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Good to have your company. A slightly later than usual Wednesday morning recording this. Dave Callum and Dave Tindall with you and ready to preview the Saudi International and the Phoenix Open on this edition of the podcast. Looking good, Mr. Tindall. You've got your scarf on over there.
Yes, it's quite cold today. And I'm going to some football tonight. I don't know why I have to wear it now, though. Getting in the spirit.
Getting prepared.
Yes.
What football are you going to see?
Liverpool against Leicester.
Oh, right, okay. And Liverpool have won the title now. It's done, signed, sealed, delivered.
Don't be silly.
It is. Come on. They can't blow it from here, can they?
Not biting.
Let's talk about last week, first of all, before we go on to this week. The two highest-ranked players in their respective fields won last week, with Bryson DeChambeau firing a final round of 64 to blitz the field in Dubai, and Justin Rose, with his new Honma equipment, scored at Torrey Pines, posted 21 under par around Torrey Pines, which is astonishing, really. I know conditions were slightly easier than usual, but if you'd have said to me, guess the winning score.
Yeah.
On Tuesday or Wednesday, I wouldn't have been guessing 21 under par.
No, and I think I said to you yesterday that I think ultimately I was put off by him switching equipment. I didn't think it would bed in so quick at that level. I thought there was a good enough field where he might improve a little to finish sort of seventh or something last week, but not to go and win his race, you know, emphatically. But it just shows, doesn't it, that if you're that good, the clubs are sort of not irrelevant, but you can sort of play with anything, and they're going to be good clubs. They're not going to say, here's some rubbish clubs, make what you will of those.
Yeah,
they would have done lots of testing. Maybe it's a lesson that we can overread into stuff.
Yeah, I think definitely. I think he made an interesting point as well when talking about the new manufacturer, and he said that what you don't hear is that every single year, even if a player is staying with, say, TaylorMade or Titleist equipment, they're chopping and changing all the time, and they've got new clubs that have to bed in. And he said it was something that is definitely, you read too much into it. And I think the golf ball is more important than the than the sticks.
Definitely, yeah.
You agree with that?
And he hasn't changed that, has he?
No, he's not. He's stuck with the same golf ball.
Yeah. No, I know in Ryder Cups when they have to sort of play another different ball, it throws people off by a mile, isn't it? Or it's hard to adjust.
He's made three doubles on the week last week as well, which just incredible birdie average throughout the week. And Adam Scott played brilliantly to put pressure on him.
Yeah. Question then for you. Who's the true world number one in your eyes?
It's tough, isn't it, now? Because
I wrote a piece the other day about it.
Well, I think it's Justin Rose at the moment.
Yeah. But
I'm not sure he's the best golfer. If you had to say who's the, I think he's playing the best.
Well, surely Bryson DeChambeau's playing the best.
Yeah.
Isn't he? How do you? It's a difficult one, isn't it? Getting a.
And what conclusion did you reach?
Well, it depends how you measure it. Over a 2-year sliding scale, which is the world rankings, Rose comes out on top. If you those Sega in ones, and DeChambeau's only fifth in the official world rankings, that doesn't seem right somehow.
Yeah,
the Sega in or Sega and ones, they're one and two, that seems more reflective. Mm. Although they're weird because they've got Ricky Fowler in at number five.
Have they?
How's that? And then I just counted world ranking points gained since DeChambeau started winning, and he would be top with Rose second, and they're quite a way clear.
Mm. And I suppose in the anti-post major markets, DeChambeau's not maybe not high enough up the list yet.
I think so, yeah. I think you could back him for any of the majors at this point.
Do you think that...
A bit slow, though, isn't he?
Oh, very slow. Well, I'll come to that in a second, actually. Do you think that golf coaches now are going to be trying to teach their students to swing on one plane like Bryson DeChambeau does? Because he's got a unique swing, hasn't he?
It's interesting.
Sort of like a Steve Stricker 2.0 swing.
Yeah, when you get someone who's doing something different and it clearly works massively, it must sort of turn a few heads. I don't know. Coaches are kind of got their own ways, really, so it's a bit... I don't think they're going to tear the rule book up and start afresh, are they? But it might get one or two thinking, is this the way forward? I don't know.
Speaking of Bryson DeChambeau, you mentioned it. We had a penalty situation where Houghton Lee was given a penalty on the 72nd hole, which dropped him. It cost him like €90,000, didn't it, that penalty?
Did it go to VAR?
It should have gone to VAR, I think, because if it had... just a ludicrous decision, in my opinion, even though a strict interpretation of the rules suggested it was the correct call.
Yeah, but then a strict interpretation of the rules would mean players are fined for slow play every like 5 minutes. So how do you work that out?
Well, I think it's embarrassing that the European Tour, I mean, their media department's exceptional. We've talked about this on the podcast before. They are leading the way in terms of generating unique content. But after the Houghton Lee penalty and the controversy surrounding that, they then posted on Twitter a clip from Bryson DeChambeau and his working out of air density and so on and so forth, which lasted 70 seconds. And that was for him.
Backfired a bit.
It did backfire because people were asked to reply with a GIF about Bryson DeChambeau, and obviously there were lots of GIFs highlighting how slowly he plays. It was a social media faux pas, in my opinion, given that Houghton Lee had just been penalised for disobeying the rules, and then DeChambeau, he doesn't get penalised for his taking too long over the ball.
Yeah, did you hear what he himself said?
I didn't know.
He said, you know, we're at the very high end of things, we're trying to work it out, I'm surprising we're not slower, he was saying.
Why doesn't he work it out while he's... playing partners are hitting.
Yeah, that's always good, because if he's hitting last as well, the big hitters sort of have less
which
excuse.
He was on that occasion.
Yes. I don't know, some players, I honestly think they want to be seen to be sounding clever, so if they detect there's a mic nearby, they'll go and they'll start trotting out. Mickelson does it.
Yeah,
when he used to chat with Bones, can everyone hear this, I'm going to say something really quite clever. So, yeah.
It needs to be clamped down on, doesn't it, I think?
Nothing ever happens there, does it? We go right.
Yeah.
Everyone goes on about it's too slow, and then... and then what really happens? How many slow play fines have we had?
Not many.
Yeah.
And when they have been, they've been maybe against some of the lesser lights.
Yeah, and then you get a daft thing with Houghton Lee. Well, not more than daft, isn't it? It's... You know, that cost him world ranking.
It was nonsensical, wasn't it?
Yeah, stupid.
Yeah.
Strange game.
Okay, let's move on to this week then. We've got the Saudi International, speaking of controversy. Yeah. Justin Rose is the favourite for this event, by the way, 6-1. Bryson DeChambeau is 13-2. Dustin Johnson, 7-1. Brooks Koepka, 10-1. Sergio Garcia, 14s. 20-1, Patrick Reed, 22-1. And bigger, the remainder. This is an extremely controversial venue for this week's European Tour event. We know the Tour has struggled for sponsorship in recent years, and they've opted for maybe for cash over morality here with, well, that's the assertion of the many rather than the few, Dave.
Yeah, it seems that way. I mean, people might think we're recording this Wednesday. I think people thought we were protesting. It took us a day to get past the protesters at the door. Couldn't get into the studios, but... yeah, have you seen Eddie Pepperell's had his say about it?
I
on
have
the blog?
Read,
have you
read
that
blog? Eddie Pepperell's blog, yeah.
Were you convinced?
Not really.
No, I
wasn't
really.
He didn't really address the issue, did he, I don't think?
It was Pepperell. More going about the humour that he was trying to sort of use, and humour as a thing in life.
Golf journalist Lawrence Donegan called him out about on that, didn't he? And he didn't really address the issue. And the issue is that it's only been intensified since the assassination of Jamal Khashoggi at the Saudi Arabian consulate in Turkey. But that's not stopped the Tour from launching this event, which many thought it might. And because there's so much money flying around, the top players have decided to go to Saudi Arabia. And you look at Justin Rose, Bryson DeChambeau, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka. Would they be in the field if they weren't being lucratively rewarded? That's the question, I suppose, and we don't know the answer, do we?
Probably not. I mean, I've read that Tiger was tried to be lured to play there, but he didn't go for whatever reason, with lots of money, and maybe that money's been spread out amongst some other top names. I mean, what's that, four of the top five in the world?
Yeah.
Playing the European Tour event. Yeah, right. As if they'd do that normally for, like, the Nordea Masters, where they would, you know, be getting about 20p or something.
But, yeah.
I don't know. It's a tricky one. There's nothing they can say. And there's nothing any of the golfers playing this week can say that will convince anybody, I don't think.
No, I don't think it's an issue with the players at all, really. I think they are secondary here. I think it's an issue with the tour. The tour should not have created this event, in my opinion.
But with all those things, if there is a thing such as people power or player power, if everyone had boycotted it, there is no event to be played, is there?
Yeah. Okay, it is available to bet on, and we are a betting company, so we will preview this event. And the Royal Greens Golf and Country Club is the host course, and it measures a shade over 7,000 yards, which is shorter than some of the other desert tracks on the roster. It plays to a par of 70 with two par fives. They are the 4th and the 18th. Water is in play on a number of holes, and sand, of course, is in play as well. And I truly believe that this week, when you're thinking about putting a number of selections together, I think motivation's a big factor. Is that something that's affected your mindset this week? I just get the feeling that we've talked about it, the likes of Rose and Johnson and Koepka in particular, three of the top four there. I think that they are there for the appearance fee, and
think they want to justify it.
I'm not sure they'll want to justify it. I just think they'd be. I think Johnson and Koepka in particular will be just happy with the week out.
Right. See, that puts you off them.
Definitely puts me off them. And Rose has got the. Rose has got the trip from San Diego to Saudi Arabia to contend with as well. I think DeChambeau just wants to win every time he plays, and he's so highly motivated.
He'd be the one out of the four I'd pick.
Definitely.
He's just won in the desert.
Yeah.
Yeah, got none of the travel issues as well. And I don't know, if you could pick two American golfers who sort of might not give a damn about a lot, you'd be going to DJ and Koepka first, wouldn't you, really?
Possibly, yeah.
If it's, you know, Koepka gets up for the majors, we're not just saying this event, maybe other events he doesn't quite get into. DJ seems to be like a sort of thoroughbred horse, looking around a bit at the minute. He's not really on his game, is he?
Yeah.
Interesting one Matt Cooper said about it. He reckoned Patrick Reed, because he's a bit, you know, controversial himself, he might almost sort of get off a little bit on the fact that there's so much hullabaloo about this event.
Yeah.
And it might tap into some psyche in his thoughts. He's 20-1. I mean, we're talking about, they are at the front of the market, they are just damn good players, aren't they? So even if they're a bit distracted, they might just make mincemeat of this field. And I think a few of them will make mincemeat of this course, to be honest. I think 20 under and
Definitely.
Yeah, so it's not a particularly nice event to preview. I think one of the big names will win it. Probably.
Yeah, I agree, but I am looking for a little bit further down the list. I've got a couple of selections.
Yeah, I've sort of got one.
Okay. you don't even seem convinced one.
Well,
I'm going with Matt Wallace as my number one selection. I think 25-1's a good price as well. I think there are, as we've mentioned, doubts about the motivation of three of the top four. And he's had six straight top 20s on tour now, Matt Wallace. And he closed with three rounds in the 60s to finish behind Bryson DeChambeau last week. And that was his second runner-up finish in Dubai in the space of a few months. So it shows he's got good desert form. And he's, I think, overdue a success in this company as well. He's raving about how well he's driving the ball with his new Ping driver. That's something that Matt Cooper mentioned in his Roto World preview as well. I think he'll just set up plenty of birdie opportunities this week. And I thought 25-1 was fair value about, well, it's still one of the leading lights in this field. So Matt Wallace at 25s for me.
Yeah, that's fair enough. My pick, slightly reluctantly, those top sort of maybe five names, I think at the minute you can throw Sergio in as just, he's the equal of some of those at the minute on current form, and you know, maybe on overall class as well. But he's just a bit bigger than the rest at 14, so I just thought an each-way play on him. Because if you start the Portugal Masters, where he went into that Portugal Masters, people are thinking, has he gone at the game for some reason? Which is all a bit odd.
Yeah.
And we now know he knew he was playing the Ryder Cup quite a way out, so he was sharpening up. Seventh there in Portugal. Then he won in Andalusia, Valderrama. Second, Ned Bank. Ninth, DP World Tour Championship. Sixth in Hong Kong. Seventh, Singapore. Probably got some appearance money for that as well. Third in Dubai Desert Classic last week. So seven straight top nine finishes for Sergio. Absolutely see no reason why he just doesn't, you know, bowl along and challenge again for this one. I look at his numbers last week. He was first for greens in reg, fifth in scrambling, sixth in driving accuracy. I think he's going to be right up there challenging.
Mm. Okay.
And 14s is enough, just about enough, isn't it, for each way?
Yeah, you like 14s, 16s, don't you? That sort of limit.
Yeah.
My second selection's a guy I went for a couple of weeks ago and did us a little bit of a favour, finishing tied for six. Pablo Larrazabal is my second pick at 80-1. He backed that performance up with another good run in the desert when finishing 20th in Dubai last week. He closed with a 64 there and had a second round 66, which I think shows his game is in very good shape. Slightly shorter course should be right up his street as well, and I think he's still being overlooked at 80-1. So Pablo Larrazabal is my second selection. By the way, did you see the European Tour posted their shots of the month? And for some unknown reason, Pablo Larrazabal's, did you see that second into 18 on the Sunday when he finished tied sixth in Abu Dhabi, that driver off the deck?
Oh yeah,
it wasn't in their list. And you just think they always go with like hold out wedges and holes in one, you know, which are slightly fortuitous.
Yeah,
and he hits a shot that he's called his best ever shot on the European Tour,
right, yeah.
And it doesn't make the... It sounds like we're bad-mouthing the European Tour's media department, which is not the case at all, because I think they're tremendous. But that shot was one of the best shots I've ever seen. he just cut it in and landed it perfect. It was just an amazing shot.
I think Monty
and
once...
it wasn't in there.
Monty once... once one shot of the year for a driver off the deck into the 18th.
That was at last week's track, wasn't it?
Yes,
that was at the in the Dubai Desert Classic.
Yeah.
They've got a plaque there now, haven't they? On the 18th fairway where he hit it from. Yeah, yeah. So that wasn't in the list, but he's clearly in good nick at the moment.
Yeah, definitely.
And as I mentioned a few weeks ago as well, this is the time to catch him. You know, when the sunny conditions.
Yeah,
he just enjoys playing golf.
Yeah, desert golf.
Yeah,
bit of sun. Yeah. All good.
Any you want to mention?
I did have a look at Hugh Loughton, and I'm sure he was 40-1 at one point, but he's now 28.
Yeah, he's been slashed, hasn't he?
That seemed to be slashed on my train ride in.
Okay.
So I can't...
Have been a few changes, because Matt Wallace actually drifted.
Oh, that's good
from
then.
22s out to 25s, which was nice.
So the thinking with Loughton, they played a new event in Oman last year, and he won that.
Yeah.
So maybe he can adapt quickly. And he's been playing great golf, really. He took a backward step last week, but honestly,
he only missed it by one, though, didn't he?
It was a blip. It was a tiny blip. And I think, if you'd given him a pass through to the weekend, he might have gone on and finished sort of 17th.
Yeah.
It was just he didn't get through by a shot. But generally, since he's come back from that injury, he's been right on the money. So I think he'll kick on again here. 28th with all those good players who could, you know, eat up all the each way places, not quite for me now.
I think there's a couple at 28 that I like here. Hao Tong Lee, will he bounce back after last week? I think he could do so easily. He's 28-1. And the one that I think we might be left kicking ourselves if he won this week is Henrik Stenson. Because 28-1, I know he's missed his last two cuts, but 28-1, Henrik Stenson, I think if he'd made one of those cuts and finished inside the top 15, he'd be 12-14-1 in this field, Stenson. And you're getting double that price at 28. Can you not see that?
Why has he missed the cuts?
I've not got that much idea why he's missed the cuts. But I think he's, I think he has been a little bit rusty.
He has, but he seemed to be coming back. I mean, he was runner up, wasn't he? In the and he was fourth in the Indonesian Masters in December, and you thought there wouldn't be that much rust gathering maybe on him because he'd had an injury before that, but he'd come back with 12th in the DP World Tour, and then he's missed those two cuts. Looking at his numbers, in Abu Dhabi, didn't do an awful lot wrong, but he owned, in Dubai Desert Classic last week, 39% driving accuracy, 58% greens in regs. His long game wasn't very smart.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand the reservations. I was looking for quotes from Stenson, but I couldn't find anything about his two performances last 2 weeks.
They don't tend to talk, do they, if they've missed the cut?
That's a fair point.
Well,
yeah.
No one really asked them. They tend to just, slink
next
off.
Week. Yeah. But, I mean, if you can excuse those two performances and you think he...
Yeah.
I mean, just 28-1's a very big price.
28-1 in a deserty event by the sea. I mean, that is his...
You'd never have thought going into Abu Dhabi that he'd be 28-1 for the third event in the Desert Swing.
Yeah.
So that's where this comes from. I just think 28-1's big.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying,
Shall we move on?
Yes.
To the feature event this week, the Waste Management Phoenix Open, where John Rahm heads the betting at 7-1. Justin Thomas is 9-1. Hideki Matsuyama, 11-1. Gary Woodland, 18-1, along with Tony Finau. And Xander Schauffele, 20-1. Phil Mickelson and Ricky Fowler. And it's 22-1 and bigger the rest. Undoubtedly one of the best events on the tour, with the crowd getting involved on the back nine at the Phoenix Open, and we have the biggest crowds of the year. Or they have the biggest crowds of the year at this event every single season. And it's a decent golf course too. It was designed by Tom Weisskopf, and it was opened in 1986 and subsequently was renovated by him in 2014. And it's a par 71 that measures just under 7,300 yards. It's a real ball striker's track. There's plenty of space off the tee too. And the changes in 2014 might have levelled the playing field a little bit. It's a shade tighter, having undergone that renovation. And it's not unreasonable to think that based on the scores since the changes were made, the winning score won't be lower than it was last week, which is incredible when you think about Scottsdale and compare it to Torrey Pines. But we've got a situation here where 21 under might not be, that might be a lower winning total last week than this week, which it discombobulates me a little bit.
Whoa.
Do you know what I mean though?
Yes. Just enjoying your wordplay there. Yeah, I know what you mean. It's
because you think of this as like a little the birdie track, don't you, a little bit? And when you think of Torrey Pines as like a US Open style venue.
I suppose this is a par 71. There's one less par 5, maybe. So it can, worth bearing in mind for first round leader betting, often cold in the morning, and the best scores often you get in the afternoon.
That's why the field's reduced to 132, isn't it? To get all the players
To get them round. For some reason, always been one of my favourites. I do love the atmosphere there. I've never been, but just seeing it on telly, it does look fantastic.
Yeah, the 16th, obviously, the signature hole.
Yeah, so it's just good when that many people are sort of really into golf, and it's just a bit different, isn't it, from the norm? So, yeah, I've got three picks. I don't know whether I'm overexcited about it or not.
You said it's one of your events that you like best. Is that from a betting perspective
as
well?
I've had loads of winners in this event.
Have you?
Yeah, I don't know why.
All right,
don't know why.
That bodes well.
Yeah, just going back way back from in the sort of 90s, probably before you were born. Maybe not.
Not quite that long.
Yeah, it was just one of those ones I seemed to just hit on the winner, like Parnovic won it, and I was on him then. It's all sorts of...
Well, that's good news, isn't it?
Yeah, so I've been betting on this for maybe 20 years and just had a lot of success on it. I don't know why.
You go first then.
Yeah, there are a lot. There are a lot of players who stand out. I think when I've done well on this tournament, it's not been rocket science. I've not come up with something massively clever.
There are there are loads of players with links to Scottsdale, aren't they?
Residents,
or they've been to college there, or they were born there. There's lots of links.
Yeah. I suppose one thing I did was when I saw the price, William Hill's prices to begin with, I went dotted down three players, and because we're recording this a day late, I've been trying to. Well, I haven't been trying to, but I've been in danger of talking myself out of them, thinking, oh, maybe he's a bit... So I'm going to go with what I originally thought, because I do like that what your first thought is your best thought idea.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with my first pick, Billy Horschel.
Oh, he's my number one pick as well, Billy Horschel, at 40s.
Just without getting too into it, it's just, of all the players who, when they're on a roll, keep it going, it's Billy Horschel. We saw him when he won the FedEx Cup, and he did a similar thing in this year's playoffs when he went third, second.
Yeah.
And since then, he's not done a lot wrong. HSBC 11th, 21st Mayakoba, 25th Tournament of Champions. Obviously, there was a break between them, but if you're just going on 2019 form, he's gone 25th, then 8th. And Billy Horschel watchers will know that, you know, he's ripe to do something well.
Yeah, that Tournament of Champions, of course, that's a limited field, isn't it?
Yeah, so
that can be classed as, I suppose, a bad result, can't it, for Horschel?
Yeah, but I guess you can explain there was a 2-month gap between his previous one. So
I'm with you.
So he's definitely progressing, trending in the right direction and all that business. And you touched on it, ball strikers might be more to the fore now, it's become harder. So I think that will play into Horschel's hands. And his form is not bad, really. He's got 3 top 25s out of 6, made the cut 5 times out of 6, I think. And his kind of vibe and his persona, I think it goes down well with the crowd. I think if he's up there in the lead, I think he'll be feeding off it. Just lots to like about him this week at 40s.
I think his course form puts him slightly under the radar, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because he's not cracked the top 20 despite making his last 4 cuts at the venue. And I think the compilers really read a hell of a lot into course form now, because I think they know when they're putting a batch of prices out.
Yeah.
Punters are so driven by course form nowadays.
Yeah, I like to look at round scores within course form, because I think that sometimes holds a key to what might happen. And last year he opened with a 66. On Saturday of 2017, he shot 6-5, so a 65. So I think when there's examples of players who can go low around that course, I think that I'd rather see that than a string of sort of 70s. Because I think they've got it in them to go low. So anything else on Horschel? I think we've covered it.
You've covered it. I suppose the one notable exception, the exception to the rule, because the rule is when Horschel gets on a run, he maintains it for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
The exception is when he won last year, the Byron Nelson, that came on the string of a batch of missed cuts. It was hopefully an anomaly.
It does seem to be, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But I did notice when he played so well in the playoffs and then he got the 8th last week. Yeah. Thought, here we go. Yeah. Billy Horschel's on a roll again.
I agree. Your second selection then, Dave?
Yeah, and I wondered if you would put up him, Byung Hun Ahn.
No,
Benny
Ahn. I was tempted though.
Yeah.
Desert form and form here.
All that, yeah. So he's 50-1, isn't he?
Yeah,
which
he
I think is a very reasonable price in this field. I think when he finished, we've noted his desert form on the European Tour, and then when he came to play this a couple of years ago, he started with a pair of 66s, and I thought, oh, this all makes sense.
I was on him, actually,
This all makes sense because of that desert form. He's just carried it over, and so many players have. I think Chris DeMarco won here, and he won, I think, the inaugural Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
So even though it's wildly different parts of the world, the desert element does kick in quite well. So he's been playing well recently in the desert. He was 12th in Dubai last week, so that sets him up here. 6 on debut at this venue, 23rd last year as well, 50-1. Simple as that, really.
Yeah, I can see that. 50-1. Benny Ahn is Dave's second pick. I'm going with a 50-1 shot as well. I'm going with Cameron Champ at 50-1. This week.
Right, yeah, still on that train.
Yeah, I'm definitely still on that train. I think most people are aware now of his prodigious power, and it's a source of much discussion, isn't it, every single week about what price he should be any given week, Cameron Champ. But I think he's got to the price where you can pull the trigger now at 50-1 off the back of a couple of missed cuts. I really think that giving it a clout and challenging some of the bunkers on this layout is around Scottsdale gives players a significant advantage. And Champ's strokes gained off the tee haven't really wavered despite those 2 missed cuts. And that means he's now 50-1, the same price as he went off for his win. Albeit this is a slightly stronger field. He's announced himself to the world now, Cameron Champ, and he puts like a demon. Return to Bermuda has to be a huge positive as he struggled on the greens last week. And I think 50-1 is more than a fair price. I might be barking up the wrong tree here, but I think he's a potential superstar, and I'll catch him at 50-1 in this field. So Cameron Champ is my second selection.
Yeah, jolly good. My final pick, my third and final pick, is hopefully, if I can find him at 80s. Yes, he's still at 80-1, Ryan Palmer.
Okay.
I've read a lot of stuff that this is one of his absolute favourite events of the year, and you look at his course form, which I do think is an important factor this week. He's a two-time runner-up, 2006, long time ago, 2015 as well, fifth in 2013. He's twice opened with... Three times in 4 years, he opened with a 64. He closed with a 62 once. He can go low around this course. And maybe it's because he's had a couple of miscuts the last 2 years, but I wouldn't read too much into them. Basically, you could argue that it's toughened up and it's not suited him, but I think you've been a bit literal with that. I think he can play well on tougher courses. And just had a lot of good play recently. Third in the CJ Cup in Korea, seventh in Vegas, then 13th at Torrey Pines last week. That's a lot of good golf from Ryan Palmer. Obviously, he doesn't win very much, but 80-1, plenty of each way juice in that price. Mm-hmm. So I thought, I've had him in mind for this event for a while, I think, if he was a big each way price. And 13th last week has set him up really nicely for it.
I thought there were like dozens of players that you could go for in this event. I was looking down the list. I like Martin Laird at 80-1 as well. Good course form and
local resident
showed up well last week, played some good golf actually at Torrey Pines. I thought that would have put him spot on for another challenge at this, so he's 80-1. I like the look of him.
First round leader,
do you?
Laird,
I can see Ches Reavy going well.
Yeah, definitely.
50-1 in the bet, and I can definitely see that.
He's a local guy, Ches Reavy. He read quotes. He used to carry the scoreboard here, so he's got his fifth major, all that business.
Oh, right, okay.
Runner-up last year.
Taylor Gooch.
Yeah, I mean, great form, isn't he?
Yeah, great form, back-to-back. He's just speaking so confidently about his game. Back-to-back top fives. He's 80-1 in the market as well, which won't put anyone off.
Adam Hadwin at 40s. I mean, he's a Scottsdale resident. We've just seen him play brilliantly in the desert.
Yeah, twice the price.
Yeah, I know his course from here isn't as good as it is at the other place.
Well, that's the reason, isn't it?
Yeah, but 40s is fine. Ricky Fowler's got some great form here.
It might be a mental block here for Ricky Fowler, given that he should have won it.
Should have won it, and he was particularly upset, didn't he? Because his granddad had come over to watch, and he couldn't quite get over the line. Mickelson's got a big chance as well, which maybe leads us on to our special.
Absolutely. Hashtag Your Odds on Twitter is available for the Waste Management Phoenix Open. Tweet your bet to @WilliamHill. Using the hashtag Your Odds, and the traders will price it up. Lots of Your Odds out on the William Hill website already, and you'll see at the top of the list, Phil Mickelson and Matt Kuchar, both to finish in the top 10, including ties, is 12-1. We've picked one each. Not landed this yet this season, but we've come close. I think this could be the week. And your half of that particular bet is Phil Mickelson.
Yeah, just top tens galores here. This is where he went to college. He's always popular, isn't he? But here, the crowd go wild, don't they, for Phil, and he loves it. He feeds off it. I've lost track of... I'm trying to top them up now. The amount of top tens he's had here is ridiculous. Three wins, and it's not all... yes, one of those wins was in 1996, but he's on and on he goes. Fifth here last year when not in great form. He was 11th. 2016, so just would have missed it. Opened with a 60 when he won it in 2013, and obviously he opened with a 60 last time we saw him in the Desert Classic, and just got pipped there. But everything points to it. He's got some great current form that we saw. He's got all the course form. I think top 10 is a sort of minimum. Anyone backing him outright, I wouldn't put you off, but top 10, yeah, I can easily see him getting there.
Same applies to my selection, I think, here as well. Matt Kuchar to finish in the top 10. I was tempted to put him up as a bet in the outright at 28-1. He just seems to be not a fashionable golfer, Matt Kuchar, when it comes to the betting markets. Do you find that?
I thought he meant his trousers and stuff.
I think that's probably a factor as well. But he's won twice this season. His latest start was the win in Wailea, where you put him up, Dave, and he won by four. His last six starts here at the venue. At Scottsdale have yielded three top 10 finishes, finished 5th and 9th the last 2 years since the renovation. I don't see what's... There's nothing not to like about Matt Kuchar to finish in the top 10.
Tell that to his Mexican caddy from a few weeks.
So Mickelson and Kuchar, this is a really decent double. It almost comes out top on the top 10 double anyway in terms of all the other bookmakers. And this one includes ties as well. So Mickelson and Kuchar both to finish in the top 10, including those ties, which is important.
Absolutely important, yeah.
Because you can get like 6 or 7 players tied for 10th or 7 or 8 tied for 9th.
Yeah.
And you get them included there. So 12-1. I think that's good value, and we'll have a point on that, won't we, between us?
We will. We've come close in that market before this year. We've had a couple of stabs at it. But yeah, I think this is the week.
Mm. Who's the player you don't want to win in either event?
Oh, I was close to putting up Webb Simpson. Not talked about him yet, but he's got a great record in this event.
Yeah.
Loves Bermuda greens. Won the Players last year.
They're saying that's definitely the 5th major now, the Players. It's become indoctrinated in the Golf Channel spiel now, that they talk about the Players as this is the 5th major now. They're trying to get it included as one of the major championships, I think.
Right.
Because it's the highest purse now, isn't it, on of any,
yeah, it's
any event.
Yeah, ridiculous. HQ, isn't it, of the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Surely a 5th major, if they haven't a 5th one, which is... I can't see it happen.
No.
Should be taken overseas somewhere.
Yeah, I don't agree with it at all.
I'll
never be classing the Players' Championship as the 5th major.
It's a bit of a joke, wasn't it, that everyone used to say it as that.
Yeah.
But then it's sort of people, when the WGCs came along, people thought, we can't really say that anymore, but it's what they're trying to do. Mm. I thought you might... Maybe every week our default, who don't you want to win, is Tony Finau, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose so. 18-1 this week.
It's like... Webb Simpson's won a Players' Championship and's got great course form. Why is he bigger price than Finau? Much as I really like Tony Finau.
I just think the narrative is, and it's a narrative I believe, that this is going to be his breakthrough season, where he wins multiple times contends for a major or two.
Yeah, I think I'd rather back him in a major at a bigger price.
Yeah, possibly so. If I had to have one player that I don't want to win this week, just purely from a betting perspective, it'd definitely be Stenson for me.
Oh, right, yeah.
28-1.
Because of that price.
Yeah, just because of that price.
Yeah.
Yeah, 28-1. Shall we recap the selections then, Dave?
Yes.
Do you want to lead us off?
Yeah, so in Saudi, I'll go a point each way on Sergio Garcia at 14s.
Yeah, I'm going a point each way on Matt Wallace at 25s and a point each way Pablo Larrazabal at 80-1.
And then in Phoenix, Arizona, I will go a point each way on the following three. Billy Horschel at 40s, Benny Ahn at 50s, and Ryan Palmer at 80s.
Point each way, I'll join you with Billy Horschel at 40-1. Point each way, Cameron Champ at 50-1. And we'll have a point on... Should we have 2 points on this? I just get the feeling this one might land.
Yeah, go for it.
A point apiece then on the Phil Mickelson and Matt Kuchar, both to finish in the top 10 at 12-1 here with William Hill. Dave Tindall, thank you for your company.
Thank you, yeah.
Thank you everyone for tuning in and listening. If you want to follow us both on Twitter, you can do at Dave Tindall Golf and at D Kellner. Do drop us a line, let us know your thoughts on the podcast, any bets that you've got this week as well. We'd love to hear from you. So at Dave Tindall Golf and at D Kellner. And make sure you check out all the betting, including the hashtag Your Odds, at williamhill.com and available on the app as well. And myself and Dave will be back hopefully on Tuesday next week. Can lock in that Pebble Beach,
and there's an Aussie event, so we need to get this done early.
Yeah, that'll definitely
early hours of Thursday.
Okay, thank you for tuning in everyone and listening, and good luck if you're having a bet with William Hill this week.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.